Parenting. That was the recurring theme on radio this week. Parents keeping memories of their children.
The pink baby grow with a rabbit motif.
Parents fighting in memory of their children.
I might be a grieving mother, but there's something fishy going on.
And parents whose children have been harmed.
She is very, very distressed. She cannot stand properly.
But first, back to the beginning. Let's start with a woman we would all love to have at the end of the phone line for parenting queries, Maureen Gaffney. She's learned. She knows the science.
37,000 articles on self-esteem or self-worth.
But she distills it all down to the vernacular, and in this case, by using the word delights. Maureen Gaffney was speaking with Marion Finucane, and they were talking about self-esteem and self-worth. How does it all work, and when does it begin?
It starts very early in life, Marion, like most things, but you're utterly dependent on the people who care for you in those first couple of years to give you a sense of who you are and to shape who you are in the most positive way, given your temperament. And I think the greatest blessing in life is if you have even one person who absolutely delights in you, delights in your very being. And that conveys to you, I think, the most important message you can ever convey to anyone in any setting, which is you matter and what you do matters. So it's the two things.
It's not telling you you're brilliant all the time.
No, it is saying you are absolutely, nobody could replace you. You're utterly unique and I absolutely, you're the apple of my eye. But, you know, what you do matters too. And so a parent who has that attitude to a child is also a parent who will encourage a child to do things and support them. And when they make mistakes and everything goes, you know, wrong, you know, they're there to reassure you and then say, go on now and give it a good try again. So you, at the end of, you know, early childhood, by about age 3 or so,
wow,
and sometimes earlier, Marion, it's like you can answer the most important questions in life. Am I the kind of person, on the basis of everything that's happened to me in the last 3 years, because that's all you know, really, am I the kind of person that's lovable? Am I the kind of person that's worthy of respect? Now, respect is a kind of, you think, a funny word for it to apply to a two-year-old. But it's the sense that your opinion counts, that, you know, when you come and tell your little stories about what happened during the day, that they have value and that someone is interested in how you experience life. So you can answer that question with a very confident yes. And that generalizes because you then think, well, this is probably how most people are going to react to me. And so you approach life expecting that you will be liked, that you will be respected. And you're kind of on the lookout for that. So, you kind of have a sense of that you're worthy of respect.
Right.
Now, if you didn't get all that or you only got it under certain conditions, you know, only when you did exactly as you were told or only when you achieved things or only when your mother was in a good mood or any of those things that happen, you know, these parents love their kids. It's just more that they haven't that free flow of affirmation that they can't bring themselves, as it were, to really attend and give that kind of affirmation, then your answer to the question of am I a lovable person, a person worthy of respect, someone who can do things, is either no, if you've had poor experiences, or it's I don't know.
Maureen Gaffney with Marion Finucane. Later, she talks about confidence. And for example, she tells Marion what the research shows about men and women and how they approach job interviews. You can listen back on the RT radio player, Marion Finucane, on Saturday. And then on Sunday, Miscellany, A.M. Cousins wrote about her own experience of being a parent.
I wrote this for the birth mother of one of my children. The day our daughter was delivered to us, I had this kind of premonition that one day in the future, her birth mother would find her and would surprise us. And I was right. Baby clothes. The first time I undressed the child, the stump of the cord withered and dropped into my hand. And the clothes she was delivered in, the tiny vest with cream satin ribbons, the pink baby grow with a rabbit motif. I swaddled them in the candlewick wrap, tucked them in a box to be stowed away, ready for the day you would come to claim her. So on that raw March night, when you hammered on our door as if your very life depended on it, I was not surprised that my daughter's eyes looked at me from your tear-swollen face. She heard the commotion and tore downstairs, my daughter, your baby. I watched as you faced each other before she took fright and fled. All I could do was offer you the bundle I had kept safe for 19 years. You pressed her baby clothes to your face, and I held you there on our hearth as torrents of grief raged around us.
The poet A.M. Cousins on Sunday Miscellany. On his programme, Ray Darcy spoke to a woman named Erica. She had had a drug habit and she was saved by her children.
I was hospitalised. I was about six and a half stone. And I was so sick, I couldn't get up off the bed.
Because you're tall enough, girl. What are you, 5'5"?
Maybe, I don't know.
5'6", yeah. So 6 and a half stone, yeah.
And I was like, it was just, nothing fit me. Size 4 clothes and they were hanging off me. My son's clothes I'd wear and they were still baggy on me. So when I was in hospital, I remember this lovely old fella came over to me and he actually blessed me and thought I wouldn't make it in hospital the next few days because it was blood. It was just, I was a different person.
Mm.
But my mum came up with my sister and brought my kids up. And it was only when I was looking in their eyes, you could see it wasn't childhood, it was just black. They were like literally dead. Like it was weird. Do you know, when I looked at their eyes, it was just like, they were afraid, they were everything, but it was just dead. It was like, they don't know, is mammy coming home?
Mm.
Do you know that kind of way? They were going to go in for my mum and my sister and just looking as if, like, it was like they're detached from me. Do you know, like they weren't feeling, I'm your mother. And it was just weird what I saw in there. And I was like, I'm not doing this to them.
And of course, when we've established it already, that when you take heroin, it's to numb your own pain.
Yeah. And so now you're taking it again because my kids were living with my mother. She got guardianship. And then you're looking at bedrooms and they're empty. You're in an empty apartment. Yeah. And you're going, oh my God. So you're numbing it, but you're not numbing it. Because you still wake up and you're still feeling crap. So, do you know what I mean? It's it's going around in a circle constantly.
Mm.
Constantly.
And some people never get out of that circle.
No.
But you managed to.
Yeah.
So it was that moment, 6 and a half stone in a hospital bed.
Looking at my kids crying.
Looking at your children.
Yeah.
Right. You had to do something about it.
Oh, definitely, yeah. It was the biggest wake-up call.
Erica with Ray Darcy. Then there were the series of parents on the radio agitating and campaigning because of their children. Jackie Donoghue came in to talk to Ryan Tuberty about how she has campaigned to change the laws in California because of her daughter Ashley and her niece Olivia. Ashley and Olivia were two of those Irish young people who died in the balcony collapse in Berkeley, California.
I think for me, it's just never give up. I mean, the first bill that was out there changed some of the codes and that. And then there was a part of it that was for reporting. So with the balcony, which was built by this particular construction company, who had paid out 23 plus million a couple of years beforehand for the same thing, water intrusion.
Settlements.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That were never reported to the state
license
board.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Remarkable.
The contractor's licensing board is someone who oversees California.
Yes.
And the bottom line is they receive probably, I'm going to say 15,000 roughly, consumer complaints a year. But they're only usually for single family homes. They wouldn't be for the multi big construction industries because anything with them, they settle and the insurance company pays it and nobody knows about it. So for me, it was, well, why does California even have a contractor's licensing board? Is it only for going after the little people like me? If I, say, built a fence too near the road on my property or something, they'll come and, you know, tell me to take it down and fine me, blah, blah, blah. But or they're not going to go after a big company like that because they don't know what they've paid out, because the insurance will pay it and move on. So that part of the bill was scratched. It was sent off for study. And usually when something is sent off for study, it's bye-bye, never to be seen again.
Yes.
So I actually then start contacting the Contractors Licensing Board, and I start sending them everything and so much research anyway, meeting with them and asking them questions. And I was blown away with the answers I was getting because I wasn't satisfied. So then the Contractors Licensing Board had, they had to vote to see would this go back for legislation the following year. And we'll say one person actually on the committee voted for it not to go back. Big mistake. So for me, red flag, go home all mad about it. And it did go back for legislation.
Sure.
But that particular person owned a company. And that company had paid out about over $1 million for water intrusion, probably about a year before. But nobody knew about it.
No.
And this person was on the Contractors Licensing Board. And for me, that's a conflict of interest.
Wouldn't you think?
So I kept it in my pocket. And then, like, when it was going through for the governor to sign, I met with the governor's office. And I let them know I might be a grieving mother, but there's something fishy going on if they have somebody on this board who's actually voting no, doesn't want it to go back, and they've already paid out for a company. It's a conflict of interest and they shouldn't be on that board.
You exposed it.
So I totally exposed that. But for me, it's like every time I'd go to Sacramento, every committee, I'd go to who was on the committee, how much they received from whoever supported them. Were they Republican? Were they Democrats? Whatever.
Were you doing this all on your own?
Yeah. This was a nighttime. Every night I'd spend hours on it. And I usually, whatever I talk about was directed at whoever was on that committee.
Mm.
So a lot of people that probably heard me speak were probably thinking that lady's crazy, but it was directed to whoever and they would know that I knew whatever about them at the time.
Jackie Donoghue with Ryan Tuberty, campaigning following the death of her daughter and niece in Berkeley, California. Tadhg Kennedy, another parent, came onto Morning Ireland to talk about his son Jack's sleeping sickness, or narcolepsy.
Not knowing what's wrong with your child, not knowing why he just falls down or stumbles or was sleeping just odd times around the place or was having these crazy mental hallucinations, really petrifying mental hallucinations. After diagnosis, which happened late 2012, since then he has been a very, very heavily medicated young man. And he has progressed okay, but he is a life on medication now. And regular naps, pretty much that's it. And that's the rest of his life.
Tadhg Kennedy was talking to Gavin Jennings on Morning Ireland following the court settlement awarded to Aoife Bennett, who had developed narcolepsy having been vaccinated with a GlaxoSmithKline drug, which the court had been told had not been properly tested on teenagers. GlaxoSmithKline rejected that. Aoife Bennett herself told Sean O'Rourke that not only did she suffer from narcolepsy, but she had also developed another condition.
And it's called cataplexy, and it's the loss of muscle tone. So, like, I guess the way we're all standing up and walking and talking, all our muscles are intact. When this happens, and it can happen at the slightest thing, they say shock or laughter, emotion, but even the very slightest little bit of emotion, some of your muscles just lose control. So my head could go, my neck could just fall, my voice box wouldn't work, my eyes might roll. My arms would just drop. I'd drop things a lot. My knees would buckle, and sometimes I'd fully collapse to the floor. The only way around it is, well, when I wasn't on medication, I kind of, you know, learned the tricks of the trade and had to learn to hold position and kind of clamber myself somehow onto a chair or onto the floor. It was very difficult, and it's even more difficult for someone to notice what's happening, even when you explain it really well to people. When you're there and you're stiff like a statue and you're hoping someone will cop, oh, this is what's happening, I need to take that thing out for hands and I need to get a chair, and because this, after a few seconds, if you don't have help like that sometimes, particularly in school when I'd pile of books in my hands, I would just drop to the floor, everything would, you know, fall to the wayside. So, and of course, it can be more dangerous when on a stairs or anything like that.
In the UK, the drug companies settled similar claims to Aoife's, but here the Irish government fought Aoife Bennett and her parents in court.
I got to watch my parents go ahead of me, and thank God for that, because we weren't expecting the level of questioning or cross-examination at all. Really, we thought that, you know, particularly for me, the plaintiff, that they take it easy on me, and, you know, they're not going to question you much, you just give your evidence. That wasn't the case. There was a very adversarial approach to it all, and I got quite a shock.
Aoife Bennett with Sean O'Rourke on the Today programme. And back to Tadhg Kennedy, whose son Jack is also a sufferer. Gavin Jennings on Morning Ireland asked him if they would still go to court.
I'm presuming we're still on the list yet to go ahead. It's up to the government now. They have spent millions, and it's over like 5 or 6 years at least, fighting and aggressively fighting this case. And it's just bonkers because, you know, the company, DSK, has settled these cases in other countries. They've definitely settled in the last 2 or 3 years in England. So why in the Irish system, why are we so aggressively fighting against our own people that basically went out and trusted the vaccination scheme and did it for the benefit of everybody? And this is the thanks you get. When something goes wrong, you're put through this trauma.
Tadhg Kennedy and another parent and another Irish courtroom.
As Natasha's father, I would like to express how traumatic and heartbreaking my daughter's death has been.
This is Peter Perry, father of Natasha Perry, speaking outside court this week, having received an apology from the HSE.
My daughter Natasha was admitted to Mullingar General Hospital suffering from severe headaches and was misdiagnosed as suffering from morning sickness.
Natasha's brain died in December 2014, but her body was kept on life support for weeks despite its obvious deterioration. And this was because Natasha was 15 weeks pregnant, and the doctors were afraid that if they turned off the machines, they could be prosecuted for aborting the fetus under the Eighth Amendment.
This is our third encounter with the legal system.
Care for the body, as distinct from the brain, is known as somatic care. Natasha's father, Peter Perry.
5 years ago, we fought to have somatic care withdrawn, to allow my daughter and her unborn baby a dignified funeral and burial. Instead, we faced Christmas Eve and St. Stephen's Day in court. Now, for Natasha's two children, Hannah and Keelan, Christmas is forever associated with the loss of their beloved mum. Whilst most of the media acted in a very respectful way, we endured a torrent of abuse on social media. Our second outing with the court system was in September 2015, where we endured an inquest into my daughter's death, which was horrendous and distressing. As a family, we gave evidence as to what happened to Natasha, but were made to feel like we were on trial, and the outcome of an open verdict was unsatisfactory. Whilst today's HSE's apology brings some closure and will allow us to finally grieve Natasha, the pain, heartbreak, and distress will never go away. Natasha is gone forever.
Peter Perry, the father of Natasha Perry, speaking outside the court. And another case of a father speaking about his daughter. This is less serious, but still distressing. Gerard was on Liveline to talk about something that happened to his daughter when she was out driving.
About 6 o'clock, it was a wet, dark evening.
Okay.
And a fully black heifer ran out in front of her. Animal hit the driver's wing.
Okay.
Came up over the windscreen of the car, pushed in the windscreen, onto the roof.
Yeah.
And off the back of the car. The animal then struggled across the road to the other side, where it fell, collapsed and died.
Other motorists and the guards all pulled up to help Gerard's daughter. But at the same time, another mystery vehicle stopped on the other side of the road beside the dead animal.
They're not too sure whether it was a Jeep and trailer or a van and trailer. But after a couple of minutes, it had moved away. But when he went over,
yeah,
the ID tags had been taken out of the animal's ear.
This could mean, of course, that the owner of the animal is not immediately identifiable, while Gerard's daughter's car was a write-off and she was badly injured. Now, just to pause here a moment. As you know, a good conversation is one which starts off in one place and ends up somewhere completely unexpected. And a good radio programme is one which mimics this. And this Liveline is a great example of that. Because initially, the callers came on to tell Joe about ear tags and how the cow's owner could be traced.
Like, you go out every morning and you count your livestock.
So, for example, Daniel reckoned someone was up to no good with the heifer.
If somebody stole that heifer and had it in the back of a trailer, that would be one of the biggest reasons why he would go and cut the tag quick.
So how do we find the heifer who owns the heifer?
Maura thought that maybe insurance might be an issue.
Yeah, we're farming ourselves. Yeah. And it actually happened to us a couple of years ago where an animal had got out on the road.
Okay.
And a girl had crashed into it. Now, luckily enough, there was only minor injuries on both parts. But public liability is something most farmers have, and that covered everything.
And what do you think? What do you think of this person who arrived along, the accident on the road, the car right off, obviously a dark, dank night, the woman in great distress, and made no inquiry as to the state of the...
Yeah, well, obviously, I don't think he had insurance then.
Aha.
And then the discussion moved to the Phoenix Park in Dublin, where Billy had had a family tragedy.
My father was on his motorbike with my late brother on the back, and the motorbike struck a cow. Yeah. He was killed instantly.
Your father?
He was, yeah. But it was a very tough time. My mum was 1 month pregnant with me at the time.
Wow.
And she was pretty much fobbed off in every direction and told that he was in the park at his own risk. She was given a pension of £1 to cope with me on the way. And she had three teenagers and an 11-year-old. And I understand the farmer was compensated for his cow. And we had to try and manage on £1.
Still on the Phoenix Park, Jane came on to tell her story.
Well, I was on my way through the Phoenix and two deer ran into my car. Some of them was just a big bang and then we just saw eyes and that sort of sliding off the windscreen. And then obviously the car immediately, I hopped out. As I hopped out of the car, there was another big bang to the other side of the car where it second deer ran into the side of the car because they were obviously crossing, they were running. And they were crossing from one side to the other, and I came across, and they hit me. Then one of them got up and ran away, and the other one got up and limped away. And like you're just really upset then because you don't know if they're hurt and the rest.
Yeah. So
I did try and contact people that night to let the Rangers know that they had been hit, but I was advised not to leave my name or anything because there was a massive fine for actually hitting deers in the Phoenix Park.
Oh, is
there? At the time, it was about €1,000 per deer.
And then back to the cattle. And Mary, a farmer, said that ear tags weren't necessary to trace the cow that had landed on Gerard's daughter's car.
Well, about 3 miles away from where I live, I'm a farmer too.
Well done.
A cow came out on the road one night around 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And a young gossam ran into it. Now, the animal was killed, but lucky the chap didn't get too many injuries. But anyway, the same thing happened where somebody removed the tag at the scene.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did he? Yeah.
But since January the 1st, 2013, in Ireland, there is a thing called BVD testing of every animal that is tagged. So it's a little sample that's taken from the calf's ear within 7 days of it being tested,
okay,
of it being tagged, and you send it to Enfer Labs. So the ICBF, along with the Department of Agriculture, would have traceability of that animal regardless of whether the ear tag had been removed or not.
Then Joe asked Mary about what it was like being a farmer.
You're your own boss.
What's the worst thing about farming?
24-hour job.
Wow. You can say that again. And don't just say 24, say 7.
365 days a year, you don't take Christmas Day off.
Exactly. The heifers don't know it's Christmas Day, do they? Or the cattle,
no,
the cattle to be milked don't know it's Christmas Day.
No. Okay, but it's very rewarding in its own sense too. And anyone that has ever been doing it, they won't really want to change.
Yeah, of course.
Mary told Joe that she farms 1,100 acres with almost 100 head of cattle, all on her own, and has done so for 17 years. She gets up at 4:30 in the morning and is in bed by 10 every night.
When you put your heart and soul into something, time doesn't matter.
And Christmas morning.
It is no different to any day. And what hurts me most about it, there's so much emphasis put on one day, Christmas Day.
Yeah, okay, good point.
And all of the poor creatures that are homeless in this country.
Yeah.
Like, it's all about, or if you hear there's going to be bad weather, there's hostels opened overnight.
Yeah,
for them.
Well, that's...
What about the other 364 days?
I know. Do you often wish you had someone there to help you?
Not really, no.
Okay.
I suppose when you've kind of been solitary on your own doing things over a lifetime span, it doesn't come into it.
Then Willie came on with a proposal for Mary.
I'd done farming since I was 14, and I said, yeah, that woman could do the man around the house, and I'd be able to do all sorts of jobs. And once up there would be great for me, Joe.
Okay, well,
see how we get on.
Willie, I heard Mary saying she has, it's 1,100 acres, Mary, isn't it?
Right.
And over 100 head of cattle. But I didn't hear her saying she's looking for a companion, Willie. So
I have a partner. I met him by chance. My friend and myself are coming back after visiting her brother in hospital.
Okay.
And we pulled up at a venue to get a cup of tea and a sandwich.
As you do, yeah.
And when we went in, there was a function going on in one part of it.
Yeah.
And the girl at the reception desk said to us, I don't think people in there would mind. You can go ahead in.
Sit in, yeah.
Like when you're looking for a cup of tea.
Yeah.
We went in and sat down, and there was a few together, and they were sitting quite close to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came over after a while when one of them got up to go to get a drink for themselves, and they started talking to us, and that was it.
Isn't that fantastic?
He is the most perfect gentleman woman could ever meet.
Great.
But somebody asked him in the last few days, were we married?
Mm-hmm.
It was funny, actually. And he said, no, we weren't, which we're not.
Yeah.
But life can be good.
2020, Mary?
Marriage doesn't mean...
Sorry, I'm just looking for a I love wedding cake.
I know. I have never actually had the pleasure of being to any wedding. So.
No, Mary.
No, I haven't.
Ah, Mary, no. Why not?
Just haven't.
The way life fell.
Yeah, the way my life was for a number of years, and now it's totally different.
Then Liveline, that began with a cow crashing into the car of a young woman and ended with weddings, came back to the young woman.
God bless you now.
Yeah, take care. And my best wishes to that girl.
Yeah, yeah, very good. And that was I'll remind listeners, that was the first thing you said when you called in. You were worried about that girl.
Mary with Joe from Liveline on Tuesday. The fine art, the very fine art of conversation.
Gordon Sondland, ambassador to the EU, said the instruction came from Mr. Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani.
I was acting in good faith. As a presidential appointee, I followed the directions of the president.
The whole Trump impeachment story rolls on. Every day there's something new. You dip in, you dip out, maybe half interested, until someone comes along to lay it out neatly for you. And one such person is academic Clodagh Harrington.
Yesterday has been described as a bombshell day for Donald Trump. And I think that's actually quite a good way to describe it without sounding, you know, melodramatic. You know, every day since the beginning of his presidency, there's been, you know, a drama of some description, and his opponents have been shouting about his, you know, misdemeanors, etc. But for me, I think yesterday was probably a day where, you know, even some of his most ardent supporters would have sat up very straight and wondered what on earth was going to happen with their president and his administration from this point on. I mean, you had the quotes there from Sondland. They're very emphatic, you know, that's quite watertight language. You know, there was a quid pro quo with Ukraine and everybody knew about it. I mean, for me, probably the most significant voice yesterday was that of Kenneth Starr, who, you know, you might remember was the independent counsel for Bill Clinton back in his own scandal days. And, you know, Ken Starr is a staunch Republican, highly conservative, not somebody to speak out against his own, if you like. And yesterday on Twitter, I saw a quote from Ken Starr saying there will be articles of impeachment and those would specifically relate to bribery. And that for me was a kind of a cha-ching moment. It's like if Starr is saying it, then that's very serious.
Clodagh Harrington from De Montfort University in the UK on Morning Ireland. A bit more American history from further back. When the singer Johnny Cash was a child, his family lived on a farm in Arkansas where they farmed cotton. At least twice in his childhood, the farm was flooded. In the 1970s, he released a song describing one of those floods from a child's point of view in 1937 when he was 5.
How high is the water, Mama? 2 feet high and rising. How high is the water, Papa? He said it's 2 feet high and rising. We can make it to the road in a homemade family boat. That's the only thing we got left to float. It's already over all the wheat notes to meet high and rising. How high is the water, mama? 3 feet high and rise. How high is the water, papa? She said it's 3 feet high and rise. Well, the hives are gone, I lost my bees. Chickens are sleeping in the willow trees. Cows in water up past her knees. 3 feet high and rising. How high is the water, mama? 4 feet high and rise. How high is the water, papa? She said it's 4 feet high and rising. Hey, come look through the window pane. The bus is coming, gonna take us to the train. Looks like we'll be blessed with a little more rain. 4 feet high and rising. How high is the water, mama? 5 feet high and rising. How high is the water, papa? She said it's 5 feet high and rising. Well, the rails are washed out north of town. We gotta head for higher ground. We can't come back till the water goes down. 5 feet high and rising. Well, it's 5 feet high and rising.
5 feet high and rising from Johnny Cash is heard on Country Time and Radio 1. That was about a flood in 1937. More trials of farming. And Brian O'Connell met Sean Hayes for a report on farm safety. Definitely one of the most heart-stopping stories of the week.
You should never trust an animal. The bull in particular that I had the run-in with. Saturday morning, 7:30 in the morning. Like typical days for me, I was busy. There was maybe 2 days' work shoved into one day kind of a thing, all rushing. The vasectomised bull, Frisian bull, 3-year-old bull, and 5 heifers were in that particular field. So I rattled a bit of nuts, threw a bit of nuts out on the ground. The 5 heifers came towards the gap, so they walked out the field nice and handy. I was behind the vasectomised bull. Just as he was about to go out the gap, he stalled and he turned around towards me. So I had a stick in my hand and I let a shout at him, go on, get, go on out the gap, whatever. And he gave me the impression that he was turning to go back out the gap, and the next thing before I knew it, he was on top of me.
That quick?
Yeah, definitely. It was a blink of an eye. Like, I didn't even get a chance to swing the stick at him. Like, you know, the stick went flying out of my hand. Came down on top of me with his head on my ribs, my chest. I couldn't get up from underneath him. I couldn't shout, I couldn't roar, I couldn't do nothing, to be honest. It all happened so fast. It felt like ages, but it was only like seconds or, I don't know, maybe a minute or two, but I just felt him fracturing with his head, fracturing my ribs, and I could feel a lot of damage being done to my stomach and my chest in that. And I know I was in big trouble at this stage. A lot of thoughts were going through my head, to be honest. You know, was this going to be it? Like, is this where it was going to end for me? Was I going to be another farm fatality in the news tonight? Do you know, the amount of things that flashed through my head in them few seconds was scary. Do you know, thinking about my wife, my son, my parents, everything. So if we're going to get out of here, we have to do something fast. So I give a look around me to see where was the nearest strand of wire, because there's an electric mains fence in the farm. Like, so I said, whatever hope I had to get him behind that. Animals usually are afraid of the mains fence, so he wouldn't come any further. When he was down on top of me with his head, I don't know, did I hit him in the side of the head with my fist or did something, and he pulled up for a second and I brought up my legs in front of him. Mm-hmm. I don't remember much after that, to be honest now. All I remember next is I was at the wire and I pulled myself in under the wire, and he was just standing on the other side of the wire, kind of, I suppose. Yeah, he couldn't get at me any further, lucky enough, and I suppose I was kind of out of his harm.
Farmer Sean Hayes with Brian O'Connell for the Today Show. You just know that Chris Watson would have loved to have been there with his microphones. Chris was featured on Sound Stories. He's a sound recordist who specialises in nature recording.
I was out on the Outer Hebrides and I came across this derelict, ruined croft, the remnants of what had been a very small farm, and had clearly been abandoned, and the building was in desperate ruin and had no roof, but these very substantial walls remained, and in the holes, in the gaps between the stonework in the building, was the nest of a starling. And I could hear sounds of a pair of birds inside, maybe incubating eggs. So I actually put a microphone up in what had been the sitting room of this croft, this now roofless building. And eventually, one of the starlings came out and started to defend its territory by singing. Heard straight away that it just wasn't the usual rambling starling song, because these birds are great mimics, and it went into some other sounds which sounded familiar in that they had a strong rhythm to them, but it certainly wasn't a bird. And as I was listening to this bird over the headphones, I was looking round and I could see the remnants of rusted farm machinery, including this ancient tractor that had obviously not moved for 20 or 30 years. And this bird was singing the song of some of this machinery. It was singing the song of a pump, of a mechanical pump that had obviously been active around this farm and used by the people that had lived there. Now, this won't be the same bird that heard those sounds. These are sounds that are mimicked, are copied. They're learnt, usually from its parents or from birds that it associates with, or indeed common sounds that are heard repetitively so that the bird can learn them, it can absorb them and then mimic them. And the strange thing was, I was sat recording the sounds in what had been somebody else's living room, a room that had obviously been full of the conversations of family life over generations, and one in which where now the people had passed into history, but the birds had returned and taken back, claimed back this space and these rocks, and were singing their own song, but ironically they were singing the songs that were around when the people were there.
Chris Watson from Sound Stories on RTE Radio 1 Extra, the online channel. Just before the break, a couple of short pieces of music. On The Rolling Wave, Leisha Kelly from Cherish the Ladies played a piece that she discovered in a book of old Irish tunes. The title of the tune is With Her Dog and Her Gun. And with a title like that, you're expecting something pretty earthy and robust. Romantic slow air with the title of With Her Dog and Her Gun. And of course, there's no reason why that couldn't be someone's idea of a romance, a woman with a gun. Leisha Kelly from The Rolling Wave. And yet again, this week, the medium of requests into music shows was used by RTE radio listeners to tell their stories. And this is Cathal Murray from Late Date.
I got a text from Dee, and Dee, I don't know what to say to you. I'm so sorry for your loss. Dee's sister Josephine sadly passed away earlier on Thursday. So you mentioned this song, and I hope this gives you a tiny, tiny bit of comfort tonight.
We're wishing on the same star. When you're deep in my heart, I don't know if you know, but when we miss each other so, look up, I'll meet you at the moon. We're staring at the same sky, strange as it seems,
We're sitting on the same earth, though there's oceans between. I don't know if you know, but when we miss each other so, look up, I'll meet you at the moon.
Imelda May's Meet You at the Moon, as requested by Dee in memory of her sister Josephine, who had just died. That was from Late Date on Radio 1. Comedian and actor Eric Lawler told Brenda Donoghue about the perils of being the baddie in Fair City.
In the Omni shopping centre there in Santry a couple of months ago, a little old man kind of creeping up to me, and he looked at me and he scares me. And I went, how are you that awful beep from Fair City? And I went, yeah. And he went, my God, you're an absolute beep. and then I realised it was serious. I says, hey, you know I'm acting, don't you? Oh, you don't give a beep what you're doing. And I says, well, listen, pal, I get a script. I have to learn the script. I can't just make up words that sound nice. Well, I hope they write you a nice word sound because you're a big beep. I just walked off and left me there.
Eric Lawler. And Fair City was featured on the 2FM sports show Game On. One of the storylines in the show last year referred to a match between fictional Carrickstown Crusaders and Baldoyle in Dublin. Dave Nolte from the Baldoyle Club saw this and decided to have a real match for charity between Baldoyle and the cast and crew of Fair City. He came into the Game On studio with Saoirse Furlong and John Cronin from the Fair City cast.
In a recent episode of Fair City, there was an allegation our goalkeeper moved. We want a retraction, and that's just it's Sarah Grapes from Carrickstown Crusaders. It's the club's 50th anniversary. I think it's Fair City's 30th anniversary.
Yeah. If I could just say, speaking of anniversaries, yesterday was the 10-year anniversary of the Thierry Henry handball in that World Cup. Yeah. So I think Irish soccer fans are sick and tired of this kind of injustice happening in football.
Ah, Thierry Henry, lest we forget. Fair City's John Cronin from the Game On programme on 2FM. Over in Reading and Gaeltacht, they had a break with tradition. They don't play ads on the station, but presenter Michelle Negrina decided to mention a cough bottle when her interviewee got into some trouble speaking.
And Rachel Shaw and Shaw Rudmoy. Tisha Belegi Castor, Tito Janikuima, Bajal Benelin,
From Tu Sacha on Radio Nagaeltacht. You know, most people think the radio is first and foremost a speaking clock. We often plan our day by the different shows, when they start, when they finish. Well, this pattern is learned early if one of Marty Whelan's listeners is to be believed. She's Liza, and her mother sent Marty a WhatsApp the other morning.
Liza, are you going to school now?
No.
When are you going to go?
When Marty was over.
When who was over?
When Marty was over.
Do you listen to Marty all the time?
Yeah.
Good for you. Get them young, you have them for life.
When Marty is over. Liza on Marty in the Morning on Lyric FM. And another child turned up in Oliver Callan's take on this week's by-election canvass.
Hello?
Hello there, little man. Are you the man of the house?
Doesn't he look a bit?
My name is Charlie, and this lady is Verona.
Hello.
And what's your name?
Mohammed. Hold on now. Mohammed.
Verona. And what's that you have there, Mohammed?
It's Action Man.
Ah, isn't that lovely?
What's he wearing? Is that a suicide vest?
Verona, Mohammed, I would like to distance myself from that remark.
I wholeheartedly apologise and so on and so forth. Look, will you vote for me? I'm only four. Four? So you could have been radicalised a year ago.
Again, I'd like to distance myself from that.
Have to go now.
Oh.
Watch Paws Patrol. Patrol? Is that an ISIS thing now here, you little...
From Callan Skakes on Radio 1 last night. And those by-elections mean that there will be no playback next week. We're making way for a by-election results programme. And from December, the playback presenter will be Sinead Mooney. Thanks for your company over the past few months, and thank you especially to those of you who've emailed with suggestions of excerpts of programmes I should play. Until we meet again, Sláinte.